Ryan Sherman, you're the science chief science officer at Hogan Assessment International. It's a very great pleasure to have you here on HRTV. You, your presentation on today's conference for Hogan Assessment in the Czech Republic was focused on how to make effective teams, what creates the sense of effectiveness in collaborating in teams. My first question is, what is it? Why some teams are more effective, why aren't, and what is the key in their success?
Sure. Well, look, it's a really critical question because almost everything we do as humans is done as teams, right? Every great human accomplishment has been done as teams, you know, flying to space, landing on the, I mean, it takes a whole team of people, building the pyramids, right? You have to have a team that's really coordinated and communicates what they're doing, who's doing what, divides up roles, knows what's going on. And so all of that takes this really impressive effort, and that's what humans are really good at. That's one of the things that separates us from so many other animals, is our ability to communicate and coordinate our activities. So it all starts with teams in terms of human success and human results, right? And in modern business, it's the same thing. So our question really was, what makes a successful or an effective team? And so We reviewed this massive literature on team performance and identified a bunch of studies that had looked at team performance and high performing teams, and we looked at a bunch of models that consulting firms have put out for high performing teams, and we took everything they said and we sort of said, well, these are the same thing, and we narrowed it all the way down to basically five dimensions of really effective team performance. The first one is trust, which is about, do we all trust each other? And the thing is that shows up everywhere. Every team model says trust is really important. And if you and I are in a relationship, if we're in a business relationship and we don't trust each other, it's gonna fail. It's the same thing with a team, right? If a team doesn't trust each other, it's gonna fail. The funny thing about trust, though, is you can't just put a team together and say, trust each other and it's good, right? Trust is this emergent property that comes from holding each other accountable, from depending on each other, getting things done, you know, knowing that you can count on each other. So it takes time to build up that trust. So that's the first dimension. The second one is team norms. Do we all agree about who's doing what, how things should be done, how do we communicate with each other, all of that part. And there's a little more depth to that. It's who's on the team. That actually is a very deep category, but it's really about how do we interact with each other and who makes which decisions. The third one is mission alignment. Do we know what we're doing? And I think a lot of people have an experience being on a team or being in a team meeting that goes on for a while, and where you go, what are we doing here? Like, does anybody remember what the point of this team was? Right. So that's the big part, is do we know what we're doing? Does everybody agree that this is worth doing and what we should be doing? The fourth one is a focus on results. So holding each other accountable, getting things done, setting goals, all the stuff you hear about, you know, goal setting, all of that is part of results. And then the fifth one that we found is really exclusive to top level teams, C-suite teams. Is strategic adaptability, which is the ability to say, this is a bad idea, we need to switch ideas, the willingness to take chances, to experiment, to try new things, and to even fail at times, is really critical for top-level teams.
Where is the role of the leader? Because you have a team, you have a leader, and it's more complicated when the leader is not the top manager, when the leader is the middle manager. So where's the role of the leader, and what shall he or she do when there are guys above, there are guys below? He has a great team, he's a great leader, but he has some limits where he can go. And maybe he can go higher, he wants to go the other way, but he can't officially.
Yes. So you're absolutely, that's a great question, because the leader is, of course, essential. And the way we think about things at Hogan, team effectiveness is equal to leadership effectiveness. How do we know if you're an effective leader? Because your team was really effective, right? So the leader is critical in this whole process. So one of the things that we found in doing this work is that the leader has to sort of be aware of all of these things. They have to understand that all of these things have to go well if the team is gonna thrive and be successful. So the leader is really critical there. The other place that we found leader being really critical is in the example that you just gave, is you have to have the support of the people above you. If you're the CEO, you have to have the support of the board, right? They have to be supporting you and your team. Otherwise, your team's going to fail. But if you're a mid-level manager, you have to have the support of your superior manager. That's really a critical part for those individuals as well. So the leader, in many respects, has a difficult task because they have to coordinate efforts with the people above, but they also have to be involved with the team. And what we find is that a lot of leaders focus on trying to move their own results and less about their team performance, right? I want to move up. And they're less concerned about making their team really successful. So they're less concerned about, does our team have the right operating structure? Does our team have the right talent level on it? What they're more concerned about is, how can I get to the next level? And that's when all the problems really start.
I mentioned that you're just chief science officer. So, mm-hmm. And you explained to me that in fact, it means that you sit on a big bunch of data that Robert Hogan once mentioned, that Hogan Assessment International, you're probably the entity that has the most business data collected about personality, about how people behave, actual studies from all the competitors. When you took a closer look on the data, what are the main factors that the leaders fail, that the teams fail, that the organizations fail? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's absolutely true. We have millions and millions of people assessed. Every year we assess at least 1 million people. These are all, you know, top managers and leaders in all over the world, right? So the other thing I like to brag about as the chief science officer is what we call our global norm. So when people get scores on our assessments, they're compared to individuals all over the world. And we have the most representative, by gender, by race, by ethnicity, by country, by language, by anything you want, right, of the working population of the globe, right? So you give me the working population, and I can tell you what the typical person looks like because we have the best data on it, right? So when we give people, you know, feedback, that's what we tend to compare people to. So the question, though, is where do we see organizations fail? Where do we see these failures happen? And one of the reasons we're a personality assessment company is because we think that's the root cause. We believe that often it's a failure in typically the leader's behavior. When the leader gets derailed, when the leader becomes narcissistic, when the leader takes too much credit, when the leader gets micromanaging and says, no, do it this way, when the leader becomes a roadblock to progress because everything has to come through me, right? I don't want anybody else to handle it. I'm going to handle everything. There's a whole bunch of behaviors that leaders can engage in that absolutely derail their teams, absolutely derail their organization. So we see the leader and the leader's personality as the critical factors to organizational success.
Is there a process to control the leader or to give him a feedback that he's derailing, the behavior of the leader doesn't support the team anymore, or that the leader got into a point that he or she cares more about their career?
Yeah, so that's the whole, I would argue, the entire point of the assessment process. So when I think about what we do as an organization, I think about ourselves as providing insight. And one of the people that we provide insights to is the test taker, the person who answers the questions, gets insight into themselves. And when we talk about personality assessment at Hogan, we're really measuring reputation. Now you might think, well, I answer the questions, how is this measuring reputation? Well, as you mentioned, in data science, we collect a lot of data. And a lot of the data we collect is not just data from you. We also collect data from people who might know you, and they tell us, this is what they're like. So when we see somebody's personality profile, we can say other people with that profile are described in these terms. And that's what you get. That's the insight you get when you take our assessments, is you find out, this is how other people see me, right? And that's a real eye-opening moment for many individuals, for many leaders, particularly when we talk about the dark side personality characteristics. It can be really enlightening. That's that real insight that you get. You go, wow, I do these things, and these are the consequences. This is how other people see me, and this is what it causes them to do. This is how they behave around me because of what I do and the reputation that I've earned.
Companies usually use this 360 mm-hmm. feedback. Do you have even more sophisticated methods how to even faster recognize that the leader is on the wrong way?
Yeah. So 360 is great. It's one of the best things you can do. We have a 360 assessment as well. It's one of the best ways to really evaluate what a leader is, because you really do get at that core reputation. You know what their supervisors think. You know what their peers think. You know what their subordinates think. You really learn a lot. The problem with 360s is they're expensive. In terms of, you've got to get all those people, right? You have to get all these people. That's a lot of time. The other thing is that you have to have people, you have to have been in the organization for a while, right? And so if you're a really derailing, you know, ineffective leader, we have to put you in an organization for a while, and you're ineffective that whole time, and then we do a 360 assessment to find out, well, you're really ineffective. In the meantime, you've ruined everything, right? So the beauty of the assessments like we use, where it's a self-report personality assessment, it takes about 45 minutes to take, is it only requires you, and it, like I said, takes 45 minutes, and bam, we're there. We've gotten most of what we're gonna get out of a 360. There's still some nice stuff to get out of a 360 later on down the road, but we've gotten most of the way there, and that's the real power of our assessments.
Ryan, why do you like your job, and why do you look forward to go to the office every day?
Well, so the really great thing about my job is, I'm a personality psychologist, and personality psychology is not one of those like, what? That's kind of it's not like saying I'm a firefighter, you know, and everybody goes, oh yeah, we need those, right? Why do we need a personality psychologist? The great thing about my job is there aren't a lot of jobs for personality psychologists, and this is probably the best job in the world for personality psychology. Why is it so great? And the reason it's so great is because of the impact we get to make on people and their lives. So we work with organizations all over the world, big organizations that everybody's heard of, but also small organizations that lots of people work for. More people work for small organizations than for big ones if you total everybody up, right? So we work with all organizations of all sizes, and we help them make better decisions about who to lead, how to make that leader more effective. And that has a huge impact on whether those organizations succeed and whether the individuals in those have really, really positive lives. So we know, for example, the number one cause of stress in an individual's life is their immediate supervisor. Okay? Bad supervisor means stress. The number one cause of disease is stress. Yes. So bad supervisor, stress, disease, right? So in some respect, and it's not, I don't try to take myself too seriously here, but in some respect, it really is the case that when we do good work, when we get good leaders, good supervisors, good managers in place, people are happier, they're more successful, they're less prone to disease, and they live better lives.
Ryan, last question. People usually, concerning psychologists, don't take those people as more technically sophisticated people or industry. Today, technology goes to all of the sectors, to all businesses. How does new technology influence your business?
Yeah, so new technology is coming at our business all the time, right? So the latest sort of trends and things you hear about is artificial intelligence, automated scoring, right? So imagine you look at your phone and you it takes a picture of your face, and we're going to use your face to decide whether or not you get a job. This kind of technology is being used by companies all the time. There's a lot of concerns with this kind of technology in terms of potential for bias, in terms of, is it accurate? Is it actually, getting the right people into those jobs? So new technology is coming into our industry all the time. The thing that we have found, and look, we've done a lot of investigations as the chief science officer, we experiment, we try lots of different things, and a lot of them just don't seem to work. It's really hard to beat a 45-minute self-report of personality assessment when it comes to accuracy, when it comes to being bias-free, when it comes to be efficient with your time and your efforts and your cost. It's just really, really hard to beat that. And so there is absolutely new technology. And look, we adopt some new technologies. We've changed our assessment format, the way it works, to be a little more user-friendly. Users seem to like that better. So we're always adopting new technologies that work, but for us, the criticality is, does it work, is it fair, and is it efficient for the user?
Ryan, thank you very much for our discussion. It was very nice to have you on HRTV and in the Czech Republic, and wish you good luck, and so that you like your work in the future. Thank you.
All right, thanks so much.